Good afternoon. I'm Bill Muth. I'm an infectious diseases physician. I work for Samaritan Health Services in Corvallis, Oregon. It's a privilege today to be speaking to the National Senior Corps, as I very much appreciate the activities of this organization in helping disadvantaged young people and the elderly. I will be speaking about clinical aspects of novel H1N1 influenza. As you can see, I'm introducing this talk with a slide that says it's the flu after all. And I do so because, indeed, this is influenza. It has some novel aspects. But it is a version of the same illness that we encounter every winter in the Northern Hemisphere. What I will do is try to help you understand what influenza is, what is the flu, how do you get it, what is a virus, because influenza is a virus, can the flu be prevented or treated, what's a pandemic, and then I'll talk specifically about H1N1 influenza, how is it different from the regular flu, and can it be treated and or prevented. And I will close with a word from the pigs. After all, this was called the swine flu. And I also open with the pigs, and they are having a meeting, and here's what they have to say. The turkeys have bird flu, the cows have mad cow disease. I'm telling you, boys, unless we want to see more ham served on Thanksgiving, we're going to have to get our own disease. So the conspiracists amongst us may think that the pigs are the ones that are behind this flu because they wanted to stay away from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Well, what is influenza? It's a highly infectious viral illness. As I mentioned, I will be helping you understand what a virus is. It is an illness that has occurred seasonally since time immemorial. It was first isolated in 1933, at which time scientists had finally developed means of identifying viruses. There are two basic types of influenza. There's influenza A and influenza B. Influenza B tends to be a milder illness, less tendency to cause epidemics, and to primarily cause illness in children. Our focus today will be on influenza A, an influenza type of virus that can behave much more aggressively. What are the symptoms of the flu? Well, they're the ones that you're familiar with. Sudden onset of fever, dry cough, muscle aches, sore throat, headache, runny nose, lack of energy. The fever and body aches last for about 3 to 5 days. Cough and lack of energy may linger for up to 2 weeks. The symptoms in general are not a lot different from those of other viral respiratory illnesses, but they may be more severe. How is influenza spread? Well, here's a nice picture showing how when you cough or sneeze, you expel a lot of droplets. And this is how influenza is spread, through exposure to these droplets. They don't travel far, but if you're in proximity, you can become infected. Influenza likely also is spread through direct contact with contaminated hands and surfaces. How contagious is it? It's very contagious, and that's why we worry about it, because it basically can run through whole communities. How quickly, when you're exposed, might you become ill with seasonal influenza? The answer to that is pretty quickly. 2 days after you are infected, you typically become ill. Infected people shed virus, and that's a term we use for how viruses are shed and transferred to others. Influenza is very sneaky in that you can shed virus the day before you actually become ill. Therefore, you could be infecting people before you even know that you have the infection. The shedding of this virus and the period in which a patient is likely contagious to another is about a week. How bad can influenza be? Well, this is a very important slide. And it's a bit complicated. On the x-axis are age groups, and on the y-axis, rates of influenza. And I'll bring your attention first to the green curve. This is visits to the doctor, and you can see that visits to the doctor are most common in the very young age groups. The next curve is the blue line, and it's hospitalization for influenza and its complications. And there you see that both at the very young ages and the old ages, there are increased rates of hospitalization. The final curve is the red line, and it shows that almost exclusively death due to influenza and pneumonia related to influenza occurs in the elderly age greater than 65. 90% of deaths to influenza in terms of seasonal influenza occur in the greater than 65-year age group. You will see as we progress that H1N1 is a different actor in terms of serious illness. The typical burden of seasonal influenza, 10 to 20% of the population is infected each year. There's an average of more than 200,000 excessive hospitalizations due to influenza and an average of 36,000 deaths due to influenza. This is not a trivial disease. Who's at risk for complications of influenza? Well, this is a very important slide because it tells you of those infected, who is likely to do the most poorly. And it features the extremes of life, children younger than 2, adults age 65 or older, pregnant women. You've been hearing about H1N1 causing problems for pregnant women. Well, influenza always does. And then persons with many different chronic medical conditions. I don't have time to list them all, but there are many that predispose to complications. So this is an important group to recognize. They're the ones we want to pay particular attention to when we try to help them either in prevention or in treatment of illness. Influenza is a viral illness. As I said, I would try to help you understand what a virus is. A virus is a very tiny submicroscopic particle that contains proteins and genetic material. It's so small that it cannot live independently. It has to utilize the machinery of existing human or other animal cells for it to reproduce. In essence, the cells become virus factories. In the case of human influenza, the virus kills cells in the process of reproduction, of it reproducing, and thus the basis for the illness that influenza causes. What does the influenza virus look like? Well, here's a schematic looking at what that virus does look like. In the middle, you can see the coiled genetic material. And then surrounding that is a capsule, and from that capsule stick out these protuberances labeled H and N. H is hemagglutinin protein, which allows the virus to stick to cells. N is neuraminidase protein, which helps the virus be released from cells. H and N can vary from one strain of influenza to another. And this is actually the basis for the variability of influenza viruses from year to year, from season to season. Who cares about hemagglutinin and neuraminidase? Your immune system does. It is these structures that the immune system makes antibodies against to help fight off infection. It would be simple if it were the same H and N antigen. Every year you could become immune and stay immune lifelong. But it is not that simple with influenza because it's continually changing these antigens. In other words, influenza is continually changing its stripes. There can be minor changes in these antigens, and that is something called drift, and that's responsible for yearly epidemics. Major changes or shift can cause pandemics of influenza. What is a pandemic? It's an influenza epidemic characterized by three things. One, a strain of influenza where few people have had, if any, have immunity to that strain of influenza. Secondly, a strain capable of easily being transmitted from person to person. And third, a strain capable of causing significant illness. So here are examples of pandemics that occurred in the 20th century, the most notorious of which was the 1918 Spanish flu, where there were an estimated 675,000 deaths in the United States. You can see that the different pandemic strains had different hemagglutinin and neuraminidase combinations. Can it be prevented? Well, an emphatic yes to this question. Vaccine is the real key to preventing influenza. It is very effective in young people, and although less effective in preventing infection in older people, it is still very effective in preventing the complications, which are the most serious aspects of influenza illness, such things as hospitalization and death. Who should be vaccinated for the seasonal flu? Well, this is a long list, and I don't have the time to read through this entire list, but in essence, you can see here that it's basically everybody should be vaccinated for seasonal influenza. When I looked at the list and found out who was not in these priority groups, it was persons between 19 and 50 years of age. Otherwise, basically everybody is a priority for seasonal vaccine. Why is it necessary to be vaccinated every year? Vaccine expires. It has a certain shelf life. The immune response wanes. And most importantly, the virus itself changes, as I've already suggested, with drift or shift in hemagglutinin and neuraminidase antigens on the virus. It is a very safe vaccine. This is an inactivated vaccine. Local reactions are mild and relatively uncommon, as are other reactions. An important point to make is that the shot contains fragments of the virus which give patients immunity. It cannot cause influenza because it does not contain a live entire virus. Now that's a little bit different in terms of what is in the live vaccine, which I will talk about after a bit. Is there treatment for influenza? Yes, there is. There are several drugs that are effective for influenza. The newer drugs, including Tamiflu and Relenza, are those you have probably heard more of. Influenza that is seasonal can have different susceptibility to different antiviral drugs, so it's important for us to know what strains are circulating so that we can make good choices. In general, treatment to be effective has to be begun within the first 48 hours of illness. It then shortens and lessens the severity of illness. Okay, that's the primer on influenza, seasonal influenza. Now let's talk about novel H1N1 influenza that has occurred in 2009. Where did it come from? Well, it is said to be an assortment of genetic material from avian strains of influenza, swine strains of influenza, and human strains of influenza. These segments of genetic material have reassorted and given this what we call novel strain of virus. What are the symptoms? Well, the symptoms are those of influenza. These are really the same things that the seasonal flu would cause: fever, cough, shortness of breath, weakness, chills, muscle aches, headache, and so forth. Is H1 worse than regular seasonal influenza, H1N1? We don't really know whether it's in a more aggressive strain. Certainly it appears to be highly contagious, and what is apparent is that it is causing severe illness in younger age groups than is typical for the seasonal flu. The next two slides make this point. On the left, you see seasonal influenza deaths, and on the right, what has happened in 2009 with novel H1N1 influenza. And there is a dramatic difference in who is dying. Typically, in this sort of yellowish, greenish color, 90% of deaths occur in persons greater than 65 years of age. It's the exact mirror image and opposite with 2009 novel H1N1 influenza. And the same thing holds true for hospitalization. Usually 60% of hospitalizations are in those greater than age 65, and it's dramatically different for novel H1 influenza A. Well, why aren't older people getting sick like they usually do? It's believed that those born prior to 1947 have some immunity based on exposure to descendant viruses from the 1918 Spanish flu. Younger people do not have that immunity. I would like to point out that it is still possible for persons greater than 65 to become infected with this virus, although it's not common. If they do, one has to worry about them having complications because they are a risk group based on their age for complications from influenza, be it seasonal or H1N1. H1N1 is unseasonal and widespread. What does unseasonal mean? It means it's occurring now in the fall, and it occurred in the summer and the spring. This is not the typical flu season. Typically, the flu season hits us hardest in January, February, in that vicinity. You can see on this map that in late October, 48 states had widespread flu activity. This is very, very unusual. Is there a vaccine to prevent H1N1? There certainly is. Who should get it? Well, this is very interesting, and I showed you a list that was very complicated and comprehensive for seasonal flu. Well, here the list is a little more simple, and it focuses on younger age groups in general. Again, pregnant women, people who care for infants who are aged less than 6 months, because these children are not eligible to be vaccinated, healthcare personnel, persons aged 6 to 24 years, notice again the young age, and persons aged 25 to 64 years who have medical conditions that put them at higher risk for influenza-related complications. There is a vaccine shortage, and the advisory Committee on Immunization Practices says that in that event we can actually pare down the priority groups a bit further, excluding healthy persons age 5 to 24 and persons 19 to 64 with high-risk medical conditions. Again, illustrating how this illness is focused on young age groups. Well, who is not on that vaccine priority list? Strictly speaking, on the basis of age, healthy people greater than 25 and anybody over age 65. This, as we have mentioned, is dramatically different in terms of the recommendations for seasonal flu, but we have to recognize who's getting sick. Eventually, when there will be enough vaccine for everybody, including those who are not in the initial priority groups. What about the live nasal vaccine? You have heard of this. I mention it because it is a very effective means of preventing influenza. However, it is limited in terms of who is eligible to receive it. Basically, only healthy people from age 2 to age 49 can receive this vaccine. So a lot of people who need it, because they have risk conditions, are not eligible to get this vaccine, or they may be too old. Well, a big issue, of course, has been that the vaccine has been in short supply. And why is that? Well, it's really fairly simple, although the production of vaccine is a very complicated process. You have to harvest identify the strain of influenza that you want to target. You have to grow the influenza virus in eggs and then harvest those eggs, inactivate the virus, and harvest the fragments that are necessary for the vaccine and purify them and so forth. So it's an involved process that takes a period of months. Unfortunately, although the public health people and vaccine manufacturers were very well intentioned, there have been slowdowns in the production of vaccine. I think the principal reason is that the yield of virus from the hen's eggs where it's grown has been lower than what had been anticipated. What about antiviral treatment for H1N1 influenza? There certainly is available antiviral treatment with the drug Tamiflu and Relenza, usually indicated only for those with risk factors of complications or those who are obviously severely ill, regardless of whether or not they have risk factors. What else can be done to avoid the flu? Well, there's something called social distancing. Basically, that means stay at home if you get sick. And I use this cartoon to illustrate that concept. A couple kids were more than willing to stay home from school the whole year to avoid it. And of course, they thought that was a good idea, but I'm sure their parents thought that was a little bit extreme. Hand washing and covering coughs would be another way of avoiding becoming ill. Well, what's yet to come? The only thing that one can say with certainty about influenza is that it is very unpredictable. We do not know whether or not there will be subsequent waves of illness. We don't know whether this virus might suddenly become more aggressive or virulent. We don't know whether it may become resistant to the drugs that at the moment are effective for it, nor do we know whether it might change such that the vaccine would no longer be a good match. As I reach the conclusion of my talk, I nonetheless am somewhat optimistic. And, you know, this isn't 1918, this is 2009, and we have a lot of tools these days to help deal with pandemic influenza. I like this quote from Dr. Markle from the University of Michigan. "One thing the history of epidemics teaches us is that given our remarkable arsenal of treatments, public health measures, and rapid surveillance and communications ability, there's never been a better time to have a pandemic than today, except that is tomorrow." And I will close with a word from Ms. Piggy. It wasn't our fault. This really isn't a virus that the pigs cooked up to avoid being on your Thanksgiving dinner plate. Thank you very much.